I'm Christina.
And this is Erin.
And you're listening to
Something to Wag About. I am pretty proud of what's happening right there.
Aww. Is that Zoe or is that Maxie?
That's the Zed dog.
Oh.
The M dog left.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't know what happened with her. She was never not wanted to be in here with me before, so I don't know what's going on with her.
Aww.
They're maturing.
They are. Isn't it such a lovely thing?
Yeah, he's almost 10. He's maturing. Oh, man. All right, so I wanted to talk about a little program I use lately. It's come up a few times lately, and I've had really, really great success with it, both from a dog standpoint and a people standpoint. So this is typically small dogs, and they're seeing me because they're reactive, so small reactive dogs. And the dogs have harness aversion to the extent that when the owner tries to either put the harness on or take the harness off, the dog will bite their owner. And this is an issue for little dogs because a lot of small dogs have a sensitive trachea or might already have some tracheal damage, especially if they have been pulling and reactive a lot. So the dog can't safely be walked in a collar. And sometimes they're flight risk too, these little dogs. And small dogs can often get out of a collar pretty good. So they have to be walked in a harness, and they have to be walked in a harness today. So we need to get a safe way for the owners to help that dog put on the harness and take the harness off without A, hopefully traumatizing the dog, and B, having the owners get bit. We don't want that rehearsal.
Right. And Christina very specifically mentioned the scenario that this is applying to. Not that we couldn't necessarily use this for other scenarios, but small dogs that have the potential or already have bitten when we pull out a harness and try and put it on, because that's a very different scenario than I pick up my harness and my dog runs away.
Mm-hmm.
And if that is what's happening, yeah, there's different options we can use.
Yeah. It's not that you can't use it for big dogs, but if you have a big dog with really serious harness aversion, I might go to a really wide collar.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right. There's other options, whereas I might not have that option. Like my small dog came to me with a collapsed trachea. I know so many small dogs with them, and that's a different concern than with the big dogs.
Is that Riker?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. He can wear a collar, but I've got a really wide one, and I very rarely put a leash on it. If I'm going to take him for a walk, like in the city where he might get excited about things, he wears a harness for sure.
Oh, I didn't know he had that.
Yeah.
Poor little guy.
I know. We're so sad. But it's really common. And especially in the toy breeds, it's very, very common.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Just because they're small, when they bite, it doesn't mean it doesn't hurt. Like the dogs I've been working with lately will have level 2 bites. People are bleeding.
For sure.
And that doesn't feel good as an owner.
And, you know, we know it's stressful for the dog, which none of us love either. So if the dog's willing to bite, we know they're super stressed. So not fun for the owner to be bitten, not fun for the dog to feel it has to bite. So
yes,
share this lovely little program you've been doing with them.
Okay. So there's two pieces. And the first piece, I actually was thinking about this. I have a video of myself doing this with Vilya when she was here as a puppy.
Yes. Yeah. You were doing the throwaway.
Yeah, throw away the treats.
Yeah, throw your puppy. That probably won't help the scenario.
No. So I first teach the dog a hand touch. Oh, no harness involved. Hand touch where the puppy touches my hand with their nose. I toss the treat away. So part of the reinforcer is becoming and move away. You have more distance now. And they might not need that from my hand, hopefully. It's kind of the training pattern I'm looking to build with them. You come towards something, you get to move away and get a reinforcer. Yes. So the last thing I want to do with these dogs is tell them they have to come in and stay really close to the harness. and feel like they can't leave, because part of why they bite is they feel like they can't leave. And a lot of dogs need to be taught how to leave. It doesn't necessarily mean they've been mistreated or mishandled. They just don't know genetically, or their own little selves don't know how to move away. So we can teach them, come in, move away, come in, move away. Once they can do that with my hand, no harness in the picture, I put the harness over my arm, it might be up to my elbow. Now we're doing hand touch, toss the treat away, hand touch, toss the treat away. If they're very severe, it might be look at my hand, toss the treat away. So, you know, we'll play with what the dog can give us. And the harness moves down my arm from my elbow, down my forearm, until it's on my hand. We're going to do lots and lots of reps. And then the hand is through the harness. I'm showing Erin. You guys can't see. So the dog actually puts their nose through the harness and then gets the treat tossed away. The treat doesn't come as a lure to put their head through the harness. Mm-hmm. So that's how they can feel stuck. So that's step one. Most dogs pick that up in no time at all. Is that similar to how you've done harness stuff?
Yes, always. And I can say, even if a dog hasn't shown that level of fear, so the biting, and that, you know, they feel trapped, so that's why they bite. Like you say, they don't know there's another option, so they're choosing to bite. But there's a lot of dogs that I work with that are a little less severe, and that I pick up a harness and they run away. And even in those cases, I am still building that sort of pattern that you talk about. I don't necessarily need to throw as far because, well, the dogs are already running away. But I do not feed at the harness right from the get-go. It would be, I pick up the harness and I throw the food to the dog. Pick up the harness and I throw the food to the dog until the dog is not running away anymore, right? Like, I pick up the harness and, you know, they're actually starting to approach because they know that food is going to appear in the vicinity of the harness, but not right at the harness. I don't ever lure, like you said, with food through the nose, like through the headpiece, because I don't want that trapped feeling. I want them to know that there's always the option that they can move away from the harness if they want.
And I think that pattern, or I think that behavior of luring the dog through the harness with a cookie, that's fine if you have a super competent puppy. Like, I have no problem with doing that. If I get my next puppy, which probably won't be for a million years, if my puppy doesn't have any fear of the harness, that's likely how I'm going to start. Lure it through, put the harness on, off we go, no big deal. This is for dogs that have harness aversion. They're already afraid of the harness, or you can tell that this puppy or this dog is going to have issues with containment and confinement. Then we can be proactive. But often, if it's a confident dog, I have no problem with the luring. I have a problem with the luring when it's a fearful dog.
Exactly. Yeah, because luring removes choice always, and everything that we're training. The fundamental, like, learning theory of trying to change an emotional response to something is that the thing happens first, right? So depending on whether or not you're doing we touch the hand and then the food comes, right? So they do the behavior first, touch the hand, and then the good thing comes. They're choosing to do the behavior first and then the thing comes. Or potentially how, when I start, I'm just changing the association of what picking up the harness is. So I pick up the harness first and then I throw the food away. But it is never show food to keep my dog close to me and then pick up the harness, because my dog, that's just trapping my dog, right? And they're not actually going to learn. So if they have some sort of fear or have developed a negative response, then we just got to make sure that we're choosing the right order so that we're not making our dogs feel trapped. Yeah.
And for that game, if you just have your cute little puppy and it's super confident and it's not yet used to harness, I don't have a problem with using higher value food, something to build, hey, this harness means cheese. But if we have fearful dogs, we want to be very careful not to use really high value food, because the high value food will act coercively. So the animal might come too close, even though they're uncomfortable and they're filled with cortisol and adrenaline. They might come too close to the harness and it might be like a false positive. So the animal might seem okay and then someone gets bit because they weren't okay. But the value of the food drew them in anyways. So right. We want to be careful with that, but we need to be very careful with that in the next part. So the next part, this is how I do things a little differently than I think a lot of people have done. And I treat it like a game of chess. So it's already at the point where we have the harness over the dog's head. And now we need to do up buckles. Maybe we need to pick up a leg and pull it through. And this is where people are getting bit. I want to use very low value food for this because we need the animal to feel comfortable saying no. And how they'll say no is they'll stop eating. So I typically use kibble if the dog's a kibble fed dog, but I'll use it kind of broken up into tiny pieces. So it's almost crumbs of kibble. Very, very low value. Like you can't get much lower value food. So dog's in front of us. Dog has their head through the harness. Now we need to buckle up the harness. I take those crumbs and I scatter them on the ground and I let the dog eat. I show my dog the hands and I reach for the harness. As soon as the dog stops eating, hands come off in a very deliberate, I'm not going to touch you display. I'm showing Aaron again. My hands are up. Can you imagine? You can imagine if you went to do something and someone went scared and you step back and put your hands up. That's what I do in this situation. So I do a little cookie scatter. I reach to do putting a leg through or buckling it, whatever. If the dog keeps eating, I use that as consent to move forward. If the, as soon as that dog stops eating, the head comes up, the tongue stops, anything, I rock back away from them and put my hands up. The dog is learning it's a game of chess. So the dog has control over whether or not I'm going to buckle up that harness or put a leg through. And this is why it's important you use very low value food.
So this is where you can imagine the little light bulb over my head and it goes off. Because Christina and I talked about this a little bit before we started the podcast. And I was almost like, what are you talking about? Because I do things a little differently. Now, I don't work with this level of aggression currently. So Christina has a little bit of different experience than me. But I now fully understand why this is so important. And yes, I agree, low value food, super important. Because I can see how this would definitely be if we're like throwing cheese down. Absolutely. Yeah. That would be coercion, right? So low value food for sure. Because it's like me, if I have cheesecake out, I almost wouldn't know how to stop eating it. I really love cheesecake.
I know. Right? I would probably eat the whole cake.
So I would just eat the whole cake, even if there were spiders crawling all around me. Because I'm like, I really like cheesecake and I don't get it a lot. So I'm going to eat this even though I'm scared. I'm like, positive of the food is so good. And I'll just deal with the spiders until I'm done my cheesecake. And then I'll be really scared.
And then the issue with using a higher value food is that as the dog's eating, as soon as the dog's done eating, they might turn and have a reaction and someone could get bit.
Yeah.
The low value food buys us a stage in between there. So they're like, sniff, sniff, lick, lick, hey, and you can take your hands off.
Right.
So we let the dog say no. But the reason to doing it this way is these dogs need to be harnessed and they need to be harnessed today. We don't have 3 weeks or a month or 6 months to condition them to actually like putting the harness on. So we have to make some different choices than we would make if we had all the time in the world.
Right. And the main point there being, you know, if you got a bigger dog, if there's other options, so using that wider collar, there are other ways we can train this. But I totally understand the need for safety for the dog. We don't want collapsed tracheas. That's not great. and they need to have a harness on as soon as possible, kind of speeding up the process a little bit while still giving the dog a choice, because that's really important, and keeping the people safe, like you say, by some time. And I can see how that would work.
And the other things we can look at too would be if it's a very severe case or if the person doesn't have a lot of skills in reading their dog, leave the harness on. Like once you get it on, the dog can wear that harness for a little while. It doesn't have to come on and off 7 times a day.
Yeah. Do you ever recommend to a client, hey, they don't like this really huge, big, bulky harness that takes up their entire body? What if we get something that's a little less intrusive, or maybe one that doesn't have to go over their head? We can clip around the neck. Do you ever try that first?
the right harness for the dog really depends on that dog. And some dogs have aversion to it going over their head. Some dogs are averse to the clips. Mm-hmm. Mostly, though, I find that those two problems aren't as big of a deal. It's the manipulation. It's the reaching under them. It's the picking up a leg if we have to. The number one thing is that the harness fits the dog.
Yeah.
It doesn't ride up onto their trachea. It is somewhat escape-proof. Those are my primary concerns. Everything else comes secondary.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But no, I don't have a favorite brand. I have a favorite brand for long-bodied dogs like Border Collies. I like the vest style for any of the small dogs. So, you know, we can adjust them quite a bit. I like the balance harness for a lot of the bully breeds. It really depends on what you need. And some dogs we might want to handle. There's so many options that there's no one or two harnesses that I love best.
So with a lot of my clients, we've been able to solve the problem just by changing the harness. So that's harness aversion for a different reason, right? They don't like the harness because it's a little uncomfortable. So maybe it doesn't fit right. Or one of my most recent clients was they had one of the rough wear harnesses. It was a really big, bulky harness. And they switched to just more of a low profile, just straps. So the dog couldn't feel it as much when it went on. Mm-hmm. And it's not a problem. The dog doesn't care anymore having the harness.
Perfect.
It's something I always consider first. It's like, can we change the harness potentially to help speed up this process? Or do we need a more elaborate training plan like the one you're talking about?